Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Morning, I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Happy Friday to you. Looking ahead to the weekend is not what it used to be. The COVID-19 pandemic has many of us staying at home as much as possible and without the company of our friends and family. Many of us are starting to run out of things to do. Later this hour, I'll talk with two guests who have some great ideas on hobbies we can take up at home and do by ourselves indoors this winter. Stay with us for that conversation, especially if you're curious about quilting, knitting, and scrapbooking. But first, we're going to revisit what happened 5 years ago in Minneapolis. A 24-year-old black man named Jamar Clark was fatally shot by Minneapolis police on November 15, 2015. He died the next day. The circumstances surrounding his arrest and the shooting by police that led to his death were questioned by people near the scene. Activists and supporters claimed Clark was unarmed and handcuffed before the shooting. Multiple investigations cleared the officers of any criminal charges. Jamar Clark's death sparked weeks of protests and the occupation of the Minneapolis Police Department's 4th Precinct. In 2017, the family sued the officers and the city, claiming the officers had wrongfully caused Clark's death. In 2019, the Minneapolis City Council signed off on a $200,000 settlement with the Clark family. Today, we are taking a look at what's changed in the last 5 years when it comes to activism in Minneapolis, as well as the community's relationship with police. Two people whose lives were changed by what happened 5 years ago are joining me now. On the line, I have Nakima Levy Armstrong, a civil rights attorney and the executive director for the Wayfinder Foundation. She previously served as president of the Minneapolis NAACP, as well as an advisor to Black Lives Matter Minneapolis. Good morning to you, Nakima.
Good morning, Angela.
Thank you for your time. We also have on the phone Irma Burns. Irma is the birth mother of Jamar Clark. Thank you for your time this morning, Irma.
You're welcome.
Now, Irma, each year since Jamar died, family and friends and community members have come together to mark the anniversary. And now it's been 5 years since his death. But do you still have days where it feels like it just happened?
I do. And it's like every time that it happened over again, each time there's another shooting of another young black male, it does. It opened up the old wounds. And it do seem just like yesterday all over again. So, yeah, it's not an easy thing to deal with, especially what is continuing to happen. It's a hard thing to deal with.
Back in 2015 and the months that followed, what did you make of the protests in response to Jamar's death after his confrontation with Minneapolis police?
What I made of that was that people are tired and that enough is enough. To cold-bloodedly shoot an innocent person that's not a threat, that's against two officers that's armed, and people witnessing this, it's just not right. And people not having it, this is got is long time coming of fuzzing the results of solving the problems with this, you know, and I truly appreciate it. Everything that people came out to do to bring the awareness to surface of my son's innocence and that he didn't deserve to be killed like that. He didn't deserve to get shot. He should still be here.
Irma, have you observed anything that is different or was different in the days and weeks after the killing of George Floyd? Was there anything different in the protest or the response to the protest to George Floyd's killing?
I know it was in George Floyd killing it was a difference. Again, this was, oh my God, this was media. I mean, this was where people could see it in broad daylight. And yeah, this was like a slap in the face as far as in African-American people, you know. But the protests got, I mean, people got more involved. I seen a lot more people getting involved, coming out, showing support, just doing whatever it is that they can to make a difference, you know. As far as, you know, communities and, all around the world coming out, you know, yeah, it was a lot of unity.
And do you believe that the video of it, the fact that it was in daylight and there was very clear video of it, did that make a big difference in the response?
Yeah, because being, again, like you said, broad daylight, where everybody can clearly see, this was nothing that they can clip or nothing that they could, you know, change, nothing that they can, you know, everybody saw this in broad daylight, you know, plain and simple. I don't know what else to say, you know, yeah. It was murder.
Nakima, you were a central figure in the protest that broke out and lasted for weeks after Jamar Clark was shot. You were a leader within the local NAACP as well as Black Lives Matter and often interviewed by reporters from all over the nation. What was it about his death that ignited something in you that was very personal to you that called you to action?
Well, I remember receiving a call from now Chief Arredondo at about 4 o'clock in the morning, letting me know that a young man had been killed by police. And I said, was he armed? And he said, I don't think so. And I just could not go back to sleep. And then I looked on social media. I saw the fact that there had been dozens of witnesses who were treated like criminals at the scene. And it just did not sit well with my spirit that a young man had been killed, that witnesses had been treated in that way. So I just reached out to NAACP members and asked them to meet me at the scene. And when we got there about 8 o'clock that morning, there was no one on the street. It didn't look like anything had even happened. And so we started knocking on doors and interviewing witnesses. And that's when we heard the story of what happened with Jamar. And just for me personally and other members of the NAACP, we just said enough is enough. We have to take a stand and fight back alongside the community. And the people were ready. You know, they were coming out of their homes. They were traumatized, saying that they had witnessed cold-blooded murder at the hands of police, and they were fearful. And so we just took action. We called a press conference. We called BLM Minneapolis, and that turned into an 18-day occupation outside of the 4th Precinct Police Station, which was unprecedented. We also reached out to witnesses to hear their perspectives, and we found out that the official police narrative was false. We found out that the narrative that the county attorney, Mike Freeman, was putting forward was false, and we worked to present the truth to the media and to the general public about what actually happened to Jamar. And like Ms. Irma said, Jamar should still be alive today. There's no reason that an unarmed young Black man standing at the back of an ambulance should have been placed in a chokehold, slammed to the ground, and shot dead within 61 seconds. That's unconscionable. It's inhumane. And that's why we stood out there in the freezing cold and refused to leave until the city forced us to leave.
But, Nakima, as I said in the introduction, multiple investigations cleared the officers of any criminal charges.
Multiple investigations always clear officers of any charges. The only time in which we have seen an officer be held accountable in the state of Minnesota for killing a person was former officer Muhammad Noor, who shot and killed Justine Damon Rusichek, who was a white affluent woman. There was no video of that incident, no witnesses outside of the officers, but somehow those investigations and a jury trial resulted in a black Muslim officer being charged and convicted. And it also resulted in Justine's family receiving an unprecedented $20 million. So what we see is that the system is more apt to protect the life of a white affluent person who is killed by police, as opposed to the numerous black men, other people of color, who are killed by police on a regular basis in the state of Minnesota. So I don't have any faith in those investigations. I certainly don't have faith in the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which time and time again has rubber stamped misconduct by police officers. We know that the deck is stacked against any person who goes against law enforcement and who tries to share a different side of the story.
So here we are in 2020, 5 years later, 5 years after Jamar Clark was shot and killed by police. How has activism evolved in the Twin Cities? What is different among community activists and how they operate and organize today?
Well, I think that we are a lot more organized because we've been consistent about taking to the streets over the last 5 years, regardless of whether someone has been killed in that moment or not. We are continuing to shine a light on egregious police misconduct and the fact that the system needs to change and that there needs to be more accountability and transparency. What we have seen since the murder of Jamar Clark has been a more widespread use of body cameras, which is important, but does not always result in accountability when police violate the rights of people. We also have seen the appointment of the first black police chief in the history of the city of Minneapolis, although he inherited what is largely a racist police department with a long track record of abusing the rights of black residents in the city of Minneapolis. Since the protests in the aftermath of George Floyd being killed, we've seen unprecedented turnover within the Minneapolis Police Department, with over 100 officers going on leave, claiming, you know, that they're experiencing PTSD. And they're getting a small taste of what the black community has been experiencing for years: post-traumatic stress disorder, fear, and violence being inflicted upon our community without any real repercussions on the part of law enforcement, even though this has been well documented, even though Minneapolis City Council has settled tens of millions of dollars in lawsuits over the years. They know that it's a problem. There was a ketamine scandal as well, where police officers were working with EMTs and encouraging the use of a date rape drug on people. And again, no real accountability in the aftermath of these scandals. And so some things have changed, but many things have stayed the same. And since Jamar Clark was killed, specifically in Minneapolis, we have had at least 5 or 6 additional people who have been killed and whose families have not received justice, which is absolutely unconscionable and unacceptable.
Nakima, 5 years later, what is different in how activists are regarded by the public? What's the difference now than what you saw in 2015?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. There's still quite a few people who believe in the system, who trust police no matter what, even when they see a video like what we saw with George Floyd being killed. But we also have more people who are conscious of the phenomenon of police violence and who are showing up at protests and who are demonstrating. We know that something unprecedented and surprising happened in the aftermath of George Floyd being killed, and that was the third precinct actually being burned down. And some are saying that outsiders played a huge role in that happening. But the reality is that nothing like that has ever happened before. And so we have people who are upset, who are angry, who are frustrated, who are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and who are ready to see a fundamental shift in how police happen, how policing happens in the city of Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota. We want to see a shift away from so many resources being poured into police departments and more resources for things like mental health intervention. We have folks who've been killed, like Travis Jordan, for example, killed in Minneapolis, who was having a mental health breakdown, and police responded and he wound up dead. So we're saying don't send police out on those calls. That's unacceptable. Find other ways to holistically address issues that people have in our community. Law enforcement is not equipped to handle some of those calls.
Irma, you are Jamar Clark's birth mother. What are your plans for this weekend, this Sunday, November 15th, which is the anniversary of the shooting? What are you going to be doing this weekend?
Well, we plan a vigil. Actually, the coalition, city of Minneapolis, is going to be
having a prayer vigil?
A vigil, yes, I'm sorry, on a Saturday, but actually usually on the 15th is when we normally do it, but being the weather might not permit, so we're going to probably be doing it Saturday, and we invite people to come out.
To the site of the shooting, or come where?
I'm sorry, it's about Mount Plymouth, where he was killed at, by his tree, on Plymouth and James.
The memorial site there near the scene?
Yes, ma'am. And
that's at 1 o'clock, I believe, Ms. Irma.
On Sunday. And then I saw an event.
No, 1 o'clock on Saturday.
1 o'clock on Saturday.
Tomorrow.
At the memorial there in North Minneapolis on Plymouth. There's a prayer vigil, right? Yeah. And so what do you do? I mean, most people, you just can't imagine losing a child, even if your child is an adult. So what brings you peace? What helps you each day to sort of move forward and keep his memory alive?
So you ask that, I opened up a foundation called Project Jamar Saving Me. And it's a nonprofit that caters to our youth. And it's like a summer program that we do for the kids. And that's how Jamar was. He liked it, you know, interacting with the kids in the neighborhood and doing stuff for them and taking them to the park and just, you know, interacting with the kids. He really loved the kids in the neighborhood and they loved him. So to try to keep his memory alive or to keep that going, that's what we do. We actually was going to be doing a build your own Easter basket before the COVID came, to give parents time to bond with their kids and build their own Easter baskets, you know, with their kids or whatever, and give them some bonding time and to create something together. And that's just some of the things that we do.
Nakima, yeah, I have a personal question for you, Nakima, as well. How have you changed in the last 5 years? Do you feel that you are different today than you were on November 15th in 2015?
Yes, my life has changed dramatically. I was a law professor at St. Thomas for 13 years. And the following semester, after Jamar was killed, I quit my job at St. Thomas to be out in the community full time. And then beyond that, you know, I've continued being an activist, you know, standing up, speaking up, being more bold, because I feel that we have a responsibility on behalf of those who can no longer speak for themselves because their lives have been needlessly snuffed out. I also ran for mayor in November of 2017 on a police accountability platform to try to prevent more people from being killed by police. So I've become much more politically active as well and helping with other people's campaigns. And I've just seen Minneapolis and the Twin Cities become the epicenter of the movement for racial justice as a result of the awareness that's been spread, of the fact that we've been relentless in taking to the streets and in holding elected officials accountable. It has made a difference, not only across the country, but actually across the world. So I'm really proud of all the organizers and activists who take to the streets alongside family members of those who have been killed by police and demanding change, transparency, and accountability.
Well, I want to thank both of you for giving us some of your time this morning. We've been talking with Irma Burns, the birth mother of Jamar Clark, a 24-year-old Black man who was fatally shot by Minneapolis police on November 15th, 2015, and Nakima Levy Armstrong, a civil rights attorney and the executive director for Wayfinder Foundation, who has worked with both the Minneapolis NAACP and Black Lives Matter. Thank you, ladies. This conversation was produced by NPR's Karen Samora.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.